Promote Slug at community events all summer long as a member of our marketing team. Head to slugmag.com/opportunities to apply today.
Shh. Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves. This is Tony Holiday with Tony Holiday and the Velvetones, and I play with Gordon Greenwood on bass out of Ogden, Utah, Joel Meza on the drums, Salt Lake City, Michael Bigelow on the baritone saxophone, and Landon Stone on lead guitar. I have a show coming up at the State Room Theater, April 28th, with Indigenous. Doors open at 8 p.m., show at 9 p.m. I'll be opening the show, so get there early. I grew up listening to Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs and Stevie Wonder and the Scorpions and early B.B. King when I was about 13. And so my friends were listening to hip-hop and 311 and these kind of bands that I didn't like. So I grew up hiding my music, honestly. I just hid it because I didn't want to... I wanted them to know I was listening to it because a lot of it was pretty weird and soft and just, I don't know, old-fashioned. So I grew up playing country and bluegrass. My dad and grandpa both play country. And the country pickers would get mad at me for bending the notes around. And the blues cats, that's what they were doing. So I remember when I found that out, I just very quickly shifted over. The Utah Blues Society, it's a nonprofit organization that its mission statement states as, you know, keeping the blues alive and serving the community with blues-involved programs and whatnot. Most cities have one, and they have the Utah Blues Festival, and we do a program, it's called Blues in the Schools, where we go to elementary schools, and I think mainly middle schools is what we're focused on right now, but where their music departments have been cut due to lack of funding. And we bring however many harmonicas, 300 or 400 harmonicas in, and during that history class where they're going through slavery, we step in and pretty much educate them on what music was coming out of that whole thing while all that nasty stuff was happening and how music was in an important role in a lot of those guys getting through their day-to-day. And out of that came roots music, which later became amplified big Chicago blues music. The Utah Blues Society sent us to Memphis in January for the International Blues Challenge, and along with every blues society eligible around the world, including the Tel Aviv Blues Society from Israel, a band from Poland I saw was really good. And, you know, in the United States, they have California, who has over 10. Washington has 4 or 5. I know Oregon has 2, maybe 3. Most cities have a blues society, so there was over 300 bands. We went ahead and did it as a 4-piece rather than bring the horn section. We were able to represent a more traditional and raw sense of the blues. Harmonica players oftentimes have a trio behind them. I think we did great. We made it to the semifinals. So it's your www.utahbluesociety.org, and they've got a bunch of information on there.
Tell me a secret, baby. Bring me 2 fingers, Jim.
Getting asked to play for Willie Nelson was a cool thing. First of all, I already knew about this gig when I was a kid. That sounds pretty crazy, but I grew up watching a lot of movies and a lot of westerns, and I watched all the Willie Nelson movies with him and Jane Fonda and Gary Busey and all the movies he was doing at the time, and I don't know, I just felt a really strong connection. And anyway, I thought I blew it. I had a chance to meet Willie Nelson, and I had a falling out with somebody, and I didn't get to take that opportunity, so I was like, oh, well, I wonder if that was me messing with my fate and if I had blown it. So that was hard for me. Then some years later, I was sitting on my couch, and I got a text message from a number I didn't know that said, would you like to open for Willie Nelson at the Red Butte Garden? A few things ran through my mind, including, who are you? But I didn't want to offend the person, so I just responded and said yes. And they said, you know, okay, well, we're going to submit this and we'll get back with you. And I think it took them 2 weeks. A long 2 weeks. They said, you know what, you're confirmed. And I still didn't know who it was, and I thought maybe it might be somebody playing a joke on me that knows me really well, because back when I was about 20 years old, I was demolishing hotels around the country, and I ripped off a piece of wallpaper one night late during work, and I wrote about this Willie Nelson gig. And a friend of mine had found it. He's been my friend since we were kids. Anyway, he was my merch guy at the Willie Show because he knew that I knew about this gig. So they say they're confirmed, and then the next day they texted me back and said, hold off. So then I got to pull back out, and it was just excruciating. I don't know, a long time went by, a couple weeks more. And they finally got back to me and said it was confirmed and all this other stuff, and I still didn't know who the person was that texted me. I did find out who that person was later, but I never wanted to ask them because I just, I was grateful for the gig and I didn't want to mess it up. I didn't want to say anything that was, you know, might be offensive or something, who knows. Anyway, so the gig was great. It was, wasn't country. They wanted me to do it by myself. I don't really play solo sets. I told them that and they said, well, do you not, you know, you don't have to take the gig. And I said, all right, well, I'll take it. And I started practicing guitar and practicing my solo set and stuff. And it wasn't until we walked in through the gates of the day of the show that they approved Lanny Stone to play guitar for me. It was basically that I could plug a guitar in. That was approved. And so I just told them, hey, I'm just going to hand the guitar over here, just right over here to this person here, Lanny. And then I'm going to sit and play harmonica. Everything's going to be fine. And those kind of shows, they're just so touchy and stuff. And it's never personal. I just, anyway, I'm just lucky that they let me have my guitar player. So, I mean, what was special about that gig was, everything about that gig was extremely special. And if you ever dream about something, if you ever, you know, feel, you know, like I said, I knew about that gig. I thought about that moment for a long time since I was a little kid. So everything about it was really special. Playing the Willie Nelson show, it was a lot of people, so I wasn't sure who dug it, but when there's 10,000 people clapping, you're going to notice the one person that isn't. You know, when we had James Harmon in town, he stayed at my house for 5 nights, and so after every show, I talked to him, and it was a knuckle sandwich every night full of information and stories and stuff. And anyway, we got done playing a festival, and he got in the car, and he said, man, I don't think that guy in the front row liked me. And after watching him play a show, one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life, I just had to laugh because, I mean, he's been in the business. He was with ZZ Top, playing with ZZ Top. If you hear harmonica on a ZZ Top album, that's James Harmon. Anyway, he's still out there after, I don't know, what is he, 50 years in the business. You know, he's still insecure about his art because art is personal. Usually artists like that who stick in the business that long are pretty passionate and they put their heart on the line. And I think when anybody does that, that's what makes great artists great, is because they're able to put their whole heart out there with that, with expecting it to get stomped on and maybe not caring or working through it. She told me time and time again. Shine my shoes in a dust storm. Playing the and learning the harmonica is harder than most instruments, and I won't say that. It's visually limited. So if you're watching a guitar player, you can see his hands matched up with what you're hearing. With a harmonica player, if you're watching somebody on stage, you have no clue. If you don't know yet, and you're still just beginning to get into the harmonica, you don't have a clue what they're doing, so that's challenging. And yeah, I still take lessons. Not so much in the way of going through scales and bending like I used to. I'm comfortable with my bending and stuff on the harmonica. Now I'm studying a lot of players, like Big Walter Horton Shuffle. So, but yeah, and I have a teacher, Jake Friel, out of Cleveland, so we tour together, and all we do is talk about harmonica. Yeah, I play all sorts of different kinds and keys of harmonica. I'm endorsed with Seidel out of Germany, and they all come in different keys. And so when I go to a jam, I bring 10 or 15 harmonicas with me in different keys. I think the earliest age somebody should start playing the harp is as soon as possible. I think that with any instrument, the longer that you're doing it, just the more natural it comes. For example, Bonnie Ray Holiday, my daughter, she's 20 months now, been playing since she was about 3 months. If you can imagine, when you bring a baby home the first time, they might have the little mittens on, and a couple weeks goes by, and a month goes by, 2 months goes by, and they're moving around and they're smiling. And 3 months, you know, about 3 months around, it might have even been sooner than that, as a matter of fact. I just remember around then she was able to get like single notes, and the importance of that is now she not only knows how to hold it, she knows to hold it with her left hand. She's comfortable on the depth. She's messed around with it enough to know what it takes, and like if she pulls it further out of her mouth, that the sound isn't as loud. And things like that that I've noticed. And she doesn't put the high end on the left side. She puts the low end on the left side. She knows the difference and if it's upside down. So and now she's 20 months. So if she didn't know that by now, she would have had to learn it again. She has six nice Seidel harmonicas. Out of necessity, I just started and didn't know how to sing. It's pretty recently that I really started to focus on actually singing instead of yelling in key. Bobby Blue Bland, Bobby Womack, Little Milton, those singers are huge for me. I listen to them every day. Ray Charles. In the States, I've been everywhere. So, I mean, my tours basically consist of a lot of West Coast, Midwest. I've been hitting a lot of Chicago, New York runs and what comes with that. So I booked a European tour last year and got the band together and got the dates lined up, and I got into some legal trouble again. My passport got taken. So I had to call up Jake Friel in Cleveland to ask him to be me on a European tour because I didn't want to cancel the whole tour, and he knows my songs and he plays harmonica. He's about my height. So he did. He jumped on a plane and went to Europe and was me on the whole tour. So I still haven't been. So Tony Holiday and the Velvetones have been to Europe, but I have not. The front porch sessions, that'll be what I did with my life. I say that because it's so much bigger than anything I can ever do, because it involves people in blues history over the last 60 to 70 years. Under advisement, I've named it Tony Holiday's Porch Sessions. It's me going around the country to people that we think are important to blues history, actually, and that's to say the least. There was the idea that how great it is to spend time on the porches and how poetic, because it got so hot down there in the South, that the porch was one way that you could cool off. It's one place you could hang out, and a lot of oftentimes you'll find them screened off. I'm not the first person to come up with this. There's all these porch session ideas. I'm just the first one to do it and go around the country and do it this way. So, I mean, a lot of people relate with this idea. They know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory, but, you know, our families used to get together, and I think they used to get to know each other a lot better, ask about each other's day, play music with each other, learn to play music there. I'd bet you that Johnny Cash, Ricky Skaggs, Bill Monroe, all those people can contribute. Buddy Guy, I know Buddy made his first guitar out of the wire from his screen door on his front porch, and I know those people can relate to the influence they've had in their lives, I think, from a front porch or two. It'll be, I believe, about 10 songs for volume one. The first session we did on Kit Anderson's porch in San Jose, California, which that is also Greaseland Records porch. And if you don't know what Greaseland is, it's just won award for the best recording studio in the nation down in Memphis. And that meant everything to me because I had watched him on TV and idolized him too for a very long time. And he backed up all the great harp players. If you ever mention a great harp player, he backed him. And so when he jumped on board, then it was like, okay, we can do something. So we did a couple sessions on his porch with Rock and Johnny Bergen from Chicago. And then we drove to Charlie Musselwhite's porch, and we had Aki Kumar, and we had Charlie Musselwhite, we had Kit Anderson, we had Alex from the Nightcats on drums, Lanny Stone. Third session was in Memphis on John Namath's porch, with John Namath, Jake Friel from Cleveland, the famous Danny Banks on drums, Joel Meza on drums, Gordon Greenwood on bass, Matthew Wilson on guitar, and then myself on harmonica too, John Namath. Fourth session is on Muddy Waters' porch, May 3rd at 2 p.m. with his eldest son, Mud Morganfield, and Lurie Bell, both Grammy nominated and a Grammy winner there. Charlie Musselwhite just won a Grammy with Ben Harper. So we've got some really talented people. And then we'll have the next two port sessions after that. And I can't wait to announce them. I have an idea who one is, and I'm really excited about it. I think there's a bunch of cool young bands in Utah coming up that play the blues that are worth mentioning, like the Baker Street Blues Band, the Arvos, Old Fashioned Depot, Green River Blues, Courtney Spaulding. All right, this next song you're about to hear is entitled Mean Ass Woman, and it came out of Greaseland Records in San Jose, California.
Now, don't you looky here, boy. Don't you wash it now. Don't you looky here, boy. I sleep on crumbs while she sleeps on silk. Sometimes I think she was raised on sour milk. I guess she prefer it that way. She put me out in the rain on a sunny day. Yeah, and I wash it now. Won't you looky here, boy? Won't you wash it now? Now this what the party sound like outside my house. 110 and I can't get in. Wash it now. Don't you looky here, too. Don't you wash it now. Yeah,
fun. Well, my boy looks like the milkman and acts like the neighbor's son. She don't bring me whiskey and she don't scratch my back. I take the bus to work, she take a big pink Cadillac. Wash it now. Yeah, won't you look here? Yeah, won't you wash it now? I'm gonna disappear too.
You can find us at my website, TonyHolidayMusic.com, or on Facebook, Tony Holiday and the Velvetones. If you want to stay in touch with the Porch Sessions, I also made a Facebook page for that, which is Tony Holiday's Porch Sessions.
Need some outfit inspiration? See the hottest street fashion Utah has to offer in our monthly Slug Style feature.